you've got that conflict because as a Christian, you know that you don't want to refuse those who ask of you. And you know that you don't love your worldly goods, but and you're willing to give them to whoever needs. But you hear those stories and you know that some people out there might be fakes. And you're worried that if you continue in your kindness, you certainly don't want to reward someone who's being wicked like that. You don't want to encourage them. And so what do you do? Now, that's not what we're going to be talking about this morning. But I say that, I paint you that scenario because there are situations as Christians where sometimes our good intentions and what we're trying to do to help people, it is abused. And we do run into those difficult situations. There was a situation that was happening in the church where Timothy was that was having a problem with their widows program. In that, one thing we're going to notice in our lesson is that caring for widows was and should continue to be a major priority for the church that we can't just let slip to the side as some little minor side project. But in the situation that we come across in 1 Timothy chapter 5, if you read Paul's instructions to Timothy, you can kind of read between the lines and gather what was going on with their widows program. It appears that, first of all, they had a very strong widows program. One where they were continually caring and providing for the widows. But as a result, it did have some negative side effects. It was discouraging some spiritually. There were, on one hand, because they had such a good widows program, they had the problem of basically some families who, rather than taking care of the widows in their own family, but they were just kind of turning them over. Oh, well, we have this widows program. Let them take care of them. And they would just turn them over instead of providing for those in their own household. There was also the problem that since they had this continuous care they were giving, that some widows were being enrolled and they were just kind of living it up. They were they didn't have to work anymore. They had the continual support of the church. And so it was encouraging laziness, which had other side effects of them being gossips and them becoming busybodies, all because the church was trying to help widows. And so when you come across situations like that, what should you as a Christian do? On one hand, you know that you can't stop giving. You can't stop doing what's required of you. But on the other hand, you can't keep doing what you're doing. You can't keep encouraging these abuses of your kindness. And that's the kind of situation you can kind of see that Timothy might be wrestling with. What do we need to do with our widows program? And that's what we're going to be studying about, was Paul's advice in this specific situation. And I don't know that the application here would apply to every kind of circumstance where our charity might be abused by someone. But it is going to be an important study for a few reasons. First of all, when you study this, it's going to remind you that caring for widows is a big deal for Christians. It is a major part of Christianity. It's not just a minor side project. It's not just, you know, calling and checking on them now and then, even though we should probably include that. But caring for widows should be a major priority. And I don't know a lot about this congregation. I don't know what kind of widows program you may have, if you have one, if you have an outstanding one. I don't know how many widows there are in this congregation. But I do know what the text says. We're going to study that. And you need to look at the situation around you and figure out what might you be able to improve as a Christian because of what we study. That's the first thing. The second thing we're going to notice is there's the importance of using discretion and when discretion should be used in our charity. And also the priority that this text gives to making sure that our charity does encourage and not discourage good character. This is how we're going to approach it. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to walk through these 13 verses. And we're just going to walk through the text. I want us all to recognize what is said here. And then at the end of the lesson, we're going to walk back through it and we're going to draw out some specific applications. So let's start by noting the text. Now, if you're in Bible class this morning, these are the verses that immediately follow verses 1 and 2. where we talked about as a church, we should be a family. And therefore, as a family, we should treat one another as family. We should treat older Christians as fathers and mothers. And therefore, it's easy to see why Paul would immediately, while he's talking about older Christian ladies, well, how should that impact, if we're a family, how should that impact the way widows are treated in the church? So let's walk through the text. Let's see what Paul says, and then we'll go back and apply it. Now, even before we dig into this text, there's a greater context, even beyond 1 Timothy. And that is, throughout all of Scripture, we have to realize just how much of a big deal caring for widows really is. You go all the way back to the law, to the book of Deuteronomy. It starts there. I mean, you see it's a major emphasis in the law. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 18. Now, in Deuteronomy chapter 10, in this little section, what we have is Moses is describing the character of the God that gives us the law. And in describing God's character, he says in verse 18, he administers justice for the fatherless and the widow, and loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Basically giving us an idea of not just the letter of the law, but what is the heart of the law? What is the intent of God who's giving this law? Well, part of it is, he wants to make sure widows and orphans are taken care of. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, here we have a description of why Israel was to lay aside a tenth of all of their produce. Why were they supposed to lay that aside? Well, one of the reasons is given in chapter 14, verse 29. You lay it aside for the Levite because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. Part of the way they were to continue to be blessed by God was by making sure they laid aside a portion of their income to take care of those who are in need, including the widows. In chapter 16, we have the description of one of the feasts that Israel was supposed to keep, the Feast of Weeks, where they were supposed to reflect back on the great blessings that God has given them that they now have in the Promised Land. And in the instructions for this feast, in verse 11, we read, "You shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, the Levite who is within your gates, the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are among you, at the place where the Lord your God chooses to make His name abide." Among the people who are supposed to rejoice, specific emphasis was given to the widows. Well, what does that mean? That means that in the Promised Land, as they were reflecting on the blessings God had given them, widows should recognize that God had a very special blessing for them. Chapter 27. In Deuteronomy chapter 27, we have a list of warnings and of curses that would be given to God's people if they failed to do certain things. And one of those warnings given in chapter 27, verse 19, "Cursed is the one who perverts justice for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow." Therefore, it should be no surprise that when we get to the book of Psalms, that God is praised in Psalm 68, verse 5, as a father to the fatherless and the defender of widows. And in Psalm 146, God is described as the Lord who watches over the strangers. He relieves the fatherless and the widows, but the way of the wicked He turns upside down. So a major emphasis throughout the Old Testament was, we have to understand that God has a very special place in His heart for those who are in hard situations. Strangers, fatherless, widows. And therefore, it should not catch us off guard one bit when we get to the New Testament And we see how much of a priority caring for orphans and widows took in the church. James chapter 1, verse 27. James, in describing what true and undefiled religion should look like, he says, "Pure and undefiled religion before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." It should be of no surprise that among the different issues that the church faced in Acts chapter 6, those first few verses, we see a situation where the care for widows was a major part of what they were doing. Now, in Acts chapter 6, they had the issue where in the book of Acts, a big part of Acts is about how the gospel is reaching not just the Jews, but now it's reaching out to the Gentiles, to the Greeks. Well, one of the problems addressed in Acts chapter 6 is some of the Grecian widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution that was given to widows. And that problem was brought before the apostles. What do we do with some of these Greek widows that are being overlooked? And so the apostles, they appointed seven men who had a reputation of good works and were full of the Holy Spirit to make sure that that problem was addressed. It was a major concern to make sure that widows were taken care of in the church. And when we get to the chapter we're studying this morning, 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul starts off in verse 3. He says, "Honor widows who are really widows." What does that mean? Honor those who are really widows. All right, now what we're going to do is we're going to kind of walk through and just look at the instructions that Paul gives concerning the care for widows, and also concerning the way in which that program that they had for caring for widows was being abused and how they should handle it. Okay? Start with the first few verses. I'm going to read verses 3 through verse 8. "Honor widows who are really widows. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and repay their parents. For this is good and acceptable before God. Now, she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. And these things command that they may be blameless. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So what's the first thing that Paul addresses? First of all, he wants to make sure, care for the widows that really are widows. Well, who's really a widow versus those who are not a widow? Well, he tells us in verse 4, the ones he's talking about that are really widows are the ones that are all alone. Not those that still have family there, children and grandchildren, that can provide the support. Therefore, the first priority is you need to take care of those widows in your own family. But at the same time, the church needs to be on the lookout for those that are really alone. Those that basically they have no other hope than to just be in prayer to God day and night to take care of their needs. Make sure you don't overlook those widows. And then he talks about, well, why is this a problem? Because if we're abusing this system by just turning over those in our own family to the church to take care of, notice how he described them in verse 8. He said they've denied the faith and they're worse than an unbeliever. I mean, you go out in the world, you look at the world, even the world knows that you're supposed to take care of your own family members. So why should it be any different in the church addressing that problem that they had? Now, before we go on, I do want to make an observation, kind of a side note, if you will, on verse 8. A lot of times, verse 8, which reads, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." A lot of times you'll hear this verse used to apply to the responsibility of men to work for the family and to provide for their family. And, well, I think that men definitely should be the providers at home. They should provide for their family. But the one point I just wanted to make is be careful in how you apply this verse. We want to make sure that we're not introducing a foreign discussion into this discussion about widows. This verse is not here for the purpose of instructing the importance of going to work and providing an income for your family. It's specifically there in talking about taking care of widows. Now, I'm not saying that you should go quit your job and not provide for your family anymore. At least men should do that in ways that are acceptable with what else we know from God's Word, that they should protect them and provide for them in ways that go along with the rest of God's Word. But just be careful about how you apply the verse. Don't take it out of context and throw it into some other lesson that doesn't apply with what Paul's talking about. That's doing violence to what Paul meant when he said that. That's just a side note I wanted to make. He is talking about providing for widows specifically with this verse. But let's go on. Let's read the rest of the context. So first, he's addressed, what do we do with widows, first of all, who still have families? Those who are not really widows. But now what do we do with those who are really widows, left all alone? Let's read verses 9 and 10. He says, "Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work." There's a couple observations I want to make from these verses. First of all, they had a number, an enrollment of some sort, where they kept up with who all needed to be supported. And Paul is making the point, you need to make sure that there's certain qualifications. Don't just enroll anybody whose husband has died onto this list. And some of those qualifications, first of all, we're only talking about older widows here, not the ones under 60. We're only talking about those who have who have only been the wife of one husband, not someone who's, you know, not someone who's in polygamy or has run off on one husband, has just married multiple men along the way. But she's had that one husband. She's been faithful. Make sure that you're only enrolling those women that have a really good reputation for good works, a reputation for having served and helped others along the way, having washed the feet of the saints. Basically, you get the description of these women are pretty awesome women. I mean, they've done a lot for the church. They deserve to be taken care of. So don't enroll everybody, but for those who have done all these good works, make sure you continue to take care of them. Okay, well, now wait a minute. Why is it that we should only do that with women over 60? Well, that's what he kind of describes next. What do we do with younger widows? Verses 11 through 15. "But refuse the younger widows. For when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, and having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, and give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan." Okay, what's Paul saying here? What is the reason why they weren't supposed to enroll into this list, widows under 60? He gives, two main reasons. The first reason's a little bit confusing. We'll talk about that one first. The second one's going to be easier to understand. But let's talk about this first reason he gives for not enrolling younger widows into this list. Okay? "But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith." What's he saying here? What does it mean that they've grown wanton against Christ and they have this desire to marry, and therefore they cast off their first faith. Well, I'm not sure, but I'm just going to kind of give you a couple of different things that I've read that some other really smart Christians think about this verse. Some think that this is talking about how basically younger Christian women, when they become widow, being younger, there's just certain temptations that they're going to face that older women might not face. And therefore, the risk was heavier that they would end up forsaking their faith out of their desire to marry. That they might go and marry someone who's not a Christian just to take care of the things that they needed. And so part of it is just because of the risk of them one day losing the faith, and you don't want the reputation going around and helping a bunch of women that end up leaving anyway. But then it also, if that's the case, it kind of makes you scratch your head that in just a couple of verses later, he actually gives instructions to, therefore I instruct the younger women to go marry. So I'm not sure that that's it. The other take on it is maybe when it's talking about forsaking the faith, it's not talking about running away from Christianity altogether, but it might be that the widows had, that when they were being enrolled in this number, it wasn't just an enrollment to receive support, but maybe there were some responsibilities that were also given to the women along with that support. You know, responsibilities to continue to basically work full-time for the church, to serve full-time, to take care of those needs, to take care of the saints. And that would explain a couple of different things. It would explain, first of all, why it's so important that they met certain qualifications before they were enrolled. That idea would also explain the problem of enrolling them and having them make this commitment to Christ that they're going to work full-time for Him, only to forsake that oath to Christ later on out of their desire to marry. And therefore, it's not that they were leaving the faith, but they were leaving their, they were forsaking their faithful commitment that they made to Christ, the special commitment that they made as widows in their service that they were going to give to Christ. I lean towards that view, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you which one's right and which one's wrong, because I'm not positive. I just wanted to throw those two ideas out there. But nonetheless, there was a risk of them forsaking some sort of oath in their faith if you enrolled them too young. So that's the first reason not to enroll widows under 60. The second one's a little easier to understand, and it's pretty plain, and that is by enrolling them in this continual care, you might encourage idleness and gossiping and them being a busybody and basically wasting time by giving them the continual care and taking that need away from them. So ultimately, what we see is that the younger widows were supposed to be refused because it was being a spiritual, even though they were taking care of them financially, it was becoming a spiritual danger to them. And it's not worth providing for them financially if it's only going to discourage them spiritually. And it seems like it had already happened to some. Some had already strayed after Satan because of that support. So, and then the last thing we see is just kind of a concluding verse in verse 16. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows. Basically just kind of reemphasizing the idea, make sure you're taking care of the widows that you're supposed to take care of, because the danger is we don't want to enroll so many widows into this program that there's not enough to go around for those that really need the care. If you give care to too many people, then you're kind of taking away the resources that are available for some. You don't want to burden the church, as Paul puts it. All right, so that's the text we're dealing with. What does that mean for us? What does that mean for the Milton congregation? What should we take away from this text? The first thing that I think we need to take away from it is, again, we're just reminded how much of a major role caring for widows was in the first century. And it should be for us as well. We know that James said that pure and undefiled religion is taking care of orphans and widows and keeping oneself unspotted from the world. That's part of what we do. We take care of widows. It needs to be a major part, not just a side project, not just when I have time, I might check on Miss So-and-so. There needs to be something in place. We see that they had a program. And sometimes people in the church, they don't like this word program. They would rather things just be kind of more organic. And we're just going to kind of take care of them as we go. Well, they had some sort of enrollment, some sort of list that they had. And the reason for that was they wanted to make sure that nobody was overlooked that really needed that care. Okay? We also get the idea that this care they were receiving, it was pretty complete care. It was continual. It wasn't just a random service project. It was, and we can see that also from Acts. Acts chapter 1, verse 6. Where the complaint was made that the Hellenistic widows were being overlooked from the daily distribution. That means that it was a continual, every single day they were caring for them. They were giving them what they needed. It was not just a small side project. It was a major thing. And we also see from this text that even though they had some issues with their widows program, and it was being abused in different ways, Paul did not say to just give up on taking care of widows out of fear that somebody might abuse it. They did not stray from their mission to make sure that those who needed that care and those who deserved it most, don't stop caring for them just because some people might be taking advantage of it and becoming lazy, and just because some people might, it might discourage them to take care of their families. That doesn't mean that you stop giving altogether. And that's an important lesson I think we can learn in a lot of different ways. Even though, yes, we have to be careful that our charity is not abused, don't stop giving. Don't stop fulfilling your responsibility. The second thing that I want to point out from this, what we know that caring for widows, it was a major part of what they did. The second thing that I need to point that we need to point out is that there is a place for discretion. Being a Christian there's not a direct correlation between how much you're giving and how good of a Christian you are. Well, let me be careful of that. As a Christian, we should be giving lots and lots and lots. And we see that here too. But there's also a place for judgment, for discretion, to understand when we should give and when we shouldn't. And that's something that we see here in this text. Now, again, let's be careful. Just because we do need to exercise discretion, that doesn't mean that that should be an excuse for not giving to those who really need it and really deserve it. It shouldn't be an excuse to stop giving. But the things we see here is, first of all, they did want to make sure that they weren't discouraging families from fulfilling their role. They wanted to make sure that they weren't discouraging the widows themselves from growing spiritually, and so they exercised discretion. That doesn't mean that we should be so afraid of giving that if there's ever any risk of it being abused, we should stop. Think about God. How does God give? In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus describes the Father as making the sun rise on the just and on the unjust and giving rain to the just and the unjust. Think about how many gifts God gives to people who just end up wasting them. So don't let the fear of somebody wasting that gift stop you from giving, but do use your best to make sure that you are encouraging good works and encouraging them through that giving. The third thing kind of goes, it kind of flows out of that. Is through this text, did you notice the major emphasis on character? The major emphasis of this text was not just how are we going to give more money, but how are we going to encourage the character of families to provide for their own widows? Timothy, how are we going to encourage the character of those really good widows who deserve it? How are we going to encourage widows to continue or encourage women now to continue in their good works so that they can receive this care? How are we going to encourage those widows who are currently under this care? How are we going to encourage, how are we going to make sure that that our character as givers is continued to be encouraged, that we don't stop giving? So we see the importance of character being encouraged throughout this text. And that's what I want for y'all to think about this morning. What does the way in which you care for widows, what kind of character are you showing through that? Are you exercising pure and undefiled religion? I don't know what kind of widows program this congregation has, but I encourage the elders or those in leadership positions, think about it. How similar or how different is your care for widows compared to what we read in this text? Do we have anything like that daily distribution? I don't know a whole lot of places that do. But that's certainly an example that we see. Are we giving the honor and repayment that these awesome older women deserve? Are we taking care of widows in your own family? This is something that must never be neglected. And all of it flows out of what he said that we studied this morning back in verses 1 and 2, that we're supposed to treat each other as family. And as family, it's a great blessing to have a church that's going to take care of those in need in our family. But it also comes with responsibilities. In every good family, everyone is pulling their own weight. Are you fulfilling your responsibility towards those who need your help the most in the church? Are you a part of that family? What it is that binds us together is not always flesh and blood, but Galatians chapter 3, verses 26 through 27, it says, "We're all sons of God through faith." The fact that we're all family is because we all have that common faith. "For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ." In Matthew chapter 12, verse 50, Jesus says, "Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven, he is my brother and my sister and my mother." Are you part of that family? If not, why not? The water's ready for you to be immersed and born into that family through your faith. Or are you living like you're in the family? If you are you taking care of your family members? If you need to respond for any reason, would you come while we sing? Have thine own.